Welcome to the American Activist. We're on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every Saturday morning, you'll hear either Don Harkins or Ingrid Castle, your host. And my name, Ingrid Castle. I'm the director of Vaccination Liberation, which is a national grassroots activistic association, as well as the manager of the Idaho Observer. And Don Harkins is going to be hosting the next hour. He has an exciting guest. He has Wanda Peely, who is organizing Circle the Wagons, April 23rd to 25th. There will be, so far there's like 3,000 truckers committed to going to Washington, D.C. to oppose the 1,700 or so Mexican trucks that will be entering our country very soon. So anyway, make sure you stay tuned for the second hour. The first hour here, we have a really special guest right from Dallas, Texas. His name is Kenneth Chaykin, and he's from Chaykin and Chaykin, and he has filed a petition in court February 22nd. It was in Travis County, Texas, in district court, to actually put a stop, a temporary and permanent injunction against Governor Rick Perry's February 2nd issuance of an executive order. And it's considered unlawful by Kenneth Chaykin, as well as the plaintiffs, and he's looking for more plaintiffs to join in this lawsuit. And so I really am excited to have him on the air to discuss the lawsuit. There's also a Senate bill. It passed the House. Well, House Bill 1098 passed the House and passed the Senate Health and Human Services Committee and is ready to be passed in the Senate to also keep a check on we call Governor Rick Perry's illegal executive order. There was no disaster to warrant such an order, and thankfully it looks like we have a decent check on, you know, the executive branch by the legislature and Kenneth Chaykin bringing the suit on the judicial level. So anyway, I want to just give you a little bit of background about Kenneth Chaykin. He was originally from Falls Church, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., and he went to the University of Florida, where he graduated in 1985 with a Bachelor of Arts degree. And then he went on to attend the National Law Center at George Washington University, Washington, D.C., where he graduated in 1988 with a degree of Doctor of Jurisprudence. And then he went on, after graduating, he moved to Dallas and started his practice in a local office of a large national law firm. And he concentrated his practice in the area of business and commercial litigation and real estate transactions. And it was about a dozen years ago that he formed Chaykin & Chaykin with his two brothers, Ken being the oldest of three brothers. And so he actually has what he thought at one time was a family dream. Some would be calling it a nightmare. But he has a family business with three brothers forming a law firm. And actually, his brother Robert is also listed as on this petition. But anyway, Kenneth, he limits his practice to complex civil litigation matters. He represents individuals, families, and businesses, and has successfully defended clients against non-meritorious multi-million-dollar claims. So anyhow, please stay tuned. We obviously have a commercial break. So you can hear Kenneth Chaykin talk about the case against Governor Rick Perry.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution. We'll show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Did you hear about Joe Bannister, IRS Special Agent Criminal Investigator that quit the IRS a few years ago because the IRS failed to show him the law or legal authority for ordinary Americans like you and me to file and pay income tax?
What do you mean? Everyone knows that you have to file and pay income taxes.
Well, not only did the IRS fail to show Joe Bannister a law that requires you and me to file and pay income tax when Joe was working for the IRS, but even after Joe quit the IRS failed to show up to several debates that the IRS was invited to debate Bannister about the legality of the income tax.
Wow, this is amazing information. Where can I talk more about this?
Go to the website at www.livefreenow.org. That's 760-868-4271. And the website is www.livefreenow.org.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Okay, welcome back to the American Activist on the Republic Broadcast Network. As I said earlier, my name is Ingrid Castle. I'm your host, and Kenneth Chaikin will be our guest. I just wanted to mention that Kenneth has taken big steps here to file a petition for temporary injunction, permanent injunction against Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, his executive order that he filed February 2nd. That would mandate school-age girls as a condition of admission to school starting in sixth grade to receive a new vaccine that purportedly protects against HPV. Some call it HPV, the human papillomavirus. Others call it help pay for Vioxx. It's produced by Merck, and Merck lost a lot in the Vioxx scandal. So it was only licensed June 6th. Sometime in June, 2006. So it hasn't even been on the market for a year, and there's no disaster that would really warrant such an extreme measure by the governor. So welcome to the American Activist, Ken.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, can you tell me how, actually our listeners are going to be pretty interested, how you got involved with this? I mean, do you have a young daughter yourself?
Yeah, I do actually have a daughter, and my daughter and I are members of a local group of dads and daughters, and it's actually a non-political type of a group that actually takes the time to go out in the outdoors and to go out camping and bike riding. And after Governor Perry had signed this executive order, interestingly enough, there was a lot of email traffic among members of this group, the dads. All of whom were expressing concern about it from every view imaginable. Some were concerned that it was unsafe. Some were concerned that it's a invasion of the parental rights to make medical decisions for their children. Others were of the opinion this was promoting abstinence. Some were thinking it was just straight up illegal and unlawful and unconstitutional, regardless of other motivations. Mm-hmm. And it kind of went on and on. And somewhere along that email chain, somebody asked, well, what can we do about it? And somebody responded, ask Chaikin. And in response, I was asked, I voiced a sort of preliminary point of view of it. I started to think about it a little bit, started doing some legal research on the power of the governor in this arena, and reached the conclusion that there really doesn't appear to be any basis for the governor to do this, and shared that point of view with some of these folks who all of a sudden said, well, let's take legal action. And so they were interested in doing that. Some of them are members of the plaintiff group. I also just ironically happened to be at a cocktail party one night where the same discussion was going on. I was asked to weigh in. Similarly, I had actually done research at that point, and other people said, yeah, we want to get involved in this as well. And from there, the idea spawned to do the lawsuit. My initial trepidation in doing it is I would have figured somebody else had done it, but turns out nobody else has. And so we carefully prepared a petition to address really the power issue, or the abuse of power issue, if you will, and the lawsuit is the result of that effort.
Wow, I'm really proud of you, Kenneth, because let me tell you, there's not enough people keeping a check on what I consider a lot of unconstitutional actions on the part of both the federal and state governments. So it's really gratifying. Well, I guess it was such a shock to people. You know, it made the news all over the country when Rick Perry had the audacity to consider this an emergency to mandate the Gardasil vaccine.
Well, let me interrupt you for a moment, and
sure.
I apologize for doing so, but I'm not so sure he considered anything an emergency. There's no evidence that he considered there to be an emergency. There's no statement of any emergency anywhere. I mean, the notion that this is in response to some perceived emergency is totally speculative and supported by absolutely no evidence anywhere.
Right, but the authority to do an executive order is predicated on the fact that there should be some kind of imminent emergency to warrant such an executive order.
Well, to put it a little bit differently, pardon me, I have terrible allergies today. We had a horrible storm show last night and everything's flying around. The governor has a very, very limited ability in certain emergency situations to issue an executive order. When asked by the media what the source of his power was to issue this executive order, conspicuously he did not cite any emergency, and instead merely cited the fact that he was the governor of Texas. And when asked what that meant, he said, well, I'm the governor of Texas. And when asked again what that meant, he said, well, I'm the chief executive officer of the state of Texas, therefore I can do this. Well, that is absolutely fundamentally legally incorrect.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty bold. You know, it's like assuming dictator status.
Well, it is bold, and without assigning motivations to the governor, just flat out is legally incorrect, with all due respect to the governor and his position. So.
Okay, so what are some of the unconstitutional things that you cited in your petition? You want to just kind of go over some of them in regards to this particular mandate? I mean, certainly that it's singling out young girls when they're not a cervical cancer or HPV type of epidemic in Texas. That's certainly an issue. But what are some of these issues that you raised in your petition?
Well, I mean, you can read them off one by one. I can comment on them. And I actually don't even have my petition sitting in front of me. But the notion, generally speaking, is that, number one, there is a separation of powers clause in the Texas Constitution that vests in the legislature certain powers, and the governor other powers. And to the extent that that lawmaking in this arena is appropriate, this arena meaning, you know, with regard to health issues and vaccine issues and the like, that is clearly within the purview of the legislature. There is no authority in the Constitution vested in the governor. In fact, Texas is a intentionally weak gubernatorial state. What that means is that when the Republic of Texas was set up and it passed its own constitution, by design, the governor was intended to be a very weak position, and the legislature was intended to be a very strong position. The governor is almost ceremonial in this state. And that's important because there are other states where the governor is granted considerably more powers. So you have a violation of that separation of power laws in the Texas Constitution by this act of the governor, by interfering in what would be, if appropriate, a legislative prerogative. Secondly, the Texas Constitution prohibits discriminating against certain classifications of people based upon their gender, their ages, their race, etc. And by definition, this is a violation of that clause of the Constitution because it impacts young females and their families, and it subjects them to a legal obligation that is not imposed upon anybody else. And so there's a violation of that. And then thirdly, it's an interference actually with statute. There is a statute in Texas called the Communicable Disease Prevention and Control Act, which the legislature passed some years ago, which sets out at least a procedural and a reasoned process for responding to what are, in fact, communicable diseases, whether through vaccination programs or otherwise. But it does not vest in the governor any authority. Instead, it vests in the Commissioner of Health and Human Services the authority for certain actions. So those are the general nature or background of the complaints that have been brought against the governor.
Well, I want to mention, under education, the law states that each student shall be fully immunized against diphtheria, rubella, mumps, tetanus, polio, except as provided by subsection C, which goes into the exemptions. But B is very interesting, and it's included in House Bill 1098. It says, subject to subsection C, the Texas Board of Health may modify or delineate the immunizations required in subsection A, or may require immunizations against additional diseases as a requirement for admission to any elementary or secondary school. So this is already given. The authority is not, to me, is the legislature is bypassed. It's been given to the Board of Health, and it doesn't say communicable diseases, which I thought was pretty interesting. I mean, most state statutes specify that they only have this authority for communicable diseases.
Right. You're talking about the new House bill?
Yeah, but it's also memorialized. They're basically just repeating what is already a law, the current statute.
Right. No, you may have a different version of the current pending legislation than I have, and so I'm a little bit at a loss to speak intelligently about it because there have been modifications of that bill literally on a daily basis as it's come through committee and public hearing. And so so I'm not up to speed enough on the details of
that
provision.
I'm looking at the statute as it stands, and I was looking at the latest version, and it is just basically repeating that the Texas Board of Health may require immunizations against additional diseases as a requirement for admission to any elementary or secondary school, and it doesn't say anything about sex or anything like that. So in other words, my point is that the Texas Board of Health could have been the one that initiated the requirement, and it seems definitely out of line that the governor would do such a thing.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Under the existing statute, the Communicable Disease and Prevention Act, there's no question about it that the Commissioner of Health and Human Services could have launched the program or the process.
Mm-hmm. So we're coming up to a break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Kenneth Chaykin of Chaykin and Chaykin.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Did you hear about Joe Bannister, IRS Special Agent Criminal Investigator that quit the IRS a few years ago because the IRS failed to show him the law or legal authority for ordinary Americans like you and me to file and pay income tax?
What do you mean? Everyone knows that you have to file and pay income taxes.
Well, not only did the IRS fail to show Joe Bannister a law that requires you and me to file and pay income tax when Joe was working for the IRS, but even after Joe quit the IRS, the IRS failed to show up to several debates that the IRS was invited to debate Bannister about the legality of the income tax.
Wow, this is amazing information. Where can I find out more about this?
Go to the website at www.livefreenow.org. That's 760-868-4271. And the website is www.livefreenow.org.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsys.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Okay, welcome back to the American Activist on the Republic Broadcast Network. I'm your host, Ingrid Castle, and we have as our guest, Kenneth Chaykin, who has authored a petition against the Governor Rick Perry of Texas regarding the executive order he filed February 2nd to mandate all schoolgirls 6th grade and on up to get the HPV vaccine, the new vaccine by called Gardasil by Merck. And I wanted to just kind of recap the whole his authority to declare an emergency, and he did not call it an emergency. I mean, he actually just said he had this, and the only way he could issue an executive order constitutionally and legally is under Chapter 418, I guess, that defines a disaster as the occurrence or imminent threat of widespread or severe damage, injury, or loss of life resulting from a natural or man-made epidemic or public calamity. And certainly, this does not follow under that. So do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely correct. You know, I have done a search of the scenarios under which the governor has actually exercise power under that statute, and the incidents are few and far between. And what's interesting about that is that statute specifically mandates or authorizes the use of the executive power function. And there's only one other statute that we've been able to identify that actually speaks about the power of executive order, and that has to do with a financial issue. So this would be the arena in which he could theoretically issue an executive order to mandate a vaccination program. But the requirements of doing so are specific and so extreme in terms of circumstance,
right,
that this doesn't come any place close to it. There's a conceivable basis for the situation involving cervical cancer linked to HPV to rise to that level, and neither has he declared this to be a disaster. And one other thing that is noteworthy, this executive order comes on the heels of another executive order the governor passed in recent history involving an energy issue that was, in fact, challenged in the courts of Austin, Travis County, and at a hearing was declared by a judge down there to be also an improper use of the executive power function. So this is a governor who not only has a tendency or propensity to you know, circumvent the process and exalt his own beliefs as to what the power might be, but he's done it recently, and he's been told by a court that is not proper. His response to that, incidentally, was that was just the decision in that case was just the musings of a liberal judge. But it's noteworthy that there's a governor who does think that he can pretty much do what he feels he wants to do.
Right. I mean, this is the second time he's abused his authority as governor. Well, I think a lot of people are wondering how much would this actually cost? I mean, with three doses being $360 and no child being turned away for not being able to afford it, so the state would be incurring a huge expense, since I don't know many parents that can afford the cost of the three injections of $360, I believe.
That's correct. And so, you know, you raise a valid point. I mean, who's going to pay for all of this, number one? And number two, who's going to pay for the related care of untoward side effects, et cetera? They're going to force people to do this, and they have a bad outcome. Is the state going to pick up the cost of that as well? So the economics associated with it at a state level are literally astronomical.
Right. I mean, I can't even fathom, multiplying that out by all the girls in school, sixth grade and forward, because I can imagine there would certainly be less than 5% that could afford to pay for that out of pocket, and I'm sure they would be objecting to that.
Well, and not only that, but you also have a huge economic and administrative cost, or as well, a bog down on the governmental process just associated with the administrative aspect of this. For example, we haven't discussed that, but there is this opt-out procedure in the executive order. It is very vaguely defined, but it seems to be written in a fashion that requires affirmative action on the part of objecting families to file sworn documents, affidavits, listing their specific reasons for the objections. And then that doesn't automatically exempt you. It looks like it goes to somebody, and we don't know who it's going to go to yet because it hasn't yet been defined, to decide whether or not they're going to approve that exemption. So there's going to be a cost associated with the administration of just the objections, and one could argue that this is going to yield a lot of objections for no reason other than the fact that this is a new, immature vaccine, and people are somewhat afraid of it.
Right. Yeah, I really don't blame them. Already in the vaccine adverse event reporting system, they've had over 100 reported adverse reactions to this vaccine.
The other thing, just on this cost issue, there is a huge unknown as to the coverage period of this vaccine. They don't know whether it's going to immunize people against the virus for 4 years, which is all they studied, or 6 years, or 8 years, or 10 years. What's going to happen after that, and who's going to pay for the booster follow-ups, et cetera?
Exactly. That's a huge question. Really good point. Well, we're coming up on a break already, and so we have another half hour. We're going to take callers in about 15 minutes, so please stay tuned. You're listening to Kenneth Chaykin of Chaykin & Chaykin.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcast Network, because you can handle the truth.
Americans already realize our nation is in deep trouble, need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions and newspaper articles of the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. Report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11th through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idahoobserver.com.
The Republic Broadcasting Network is very proud to present a new educational tool that will inform and update our listeners on the most critically important topics and issues of the day. This new 50 CD collection contains invaluable information, carefully selected from the very best shows in the RBN archives. These standard format CDs have been painstakingly edited to remove all commercial and unrelated topic content. Each CD has been divided into multiple tracks for ease of use and review in any standard CD player. Each CD targets a specific subject subject matter. For example, Agenda 21, vaccinations, 9/11, depleted uranium, the war in Iraq, fluoride, deception in the churches, genetically modified foods, animal RFID tags, and many more topics. We encourage you to make copies and get them out to as many people as you can. Call and order your library CDs for the price of $150, 800-724-2719, or go to the website rbnlive.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Okay, welcome back to the American Activist on the Republic Broadcast Network. Kenneth Chaikin is guest, and he is sharing with us the lawsuit he filed in Travis County, Texas, against Governor Rick Perry's executive order mandating HPV vaccine to school-age girls. He filed that February 22nd. Did I say that? Anyway, I want to just remind everyone that this is a lawsuit where we're asking for parents throughout the state of Texas to get on board. They would like to have at least 100 parents as plaintiffs to show that there's a huge amount of concern and to add some weight to the serious nature of Rick Perry's executive order and the fact that it is unlawful. So, Kip, do you want to tell people how they can contact you and be involved in this suit and how they can download the petition?
Let me first address your comment as I'm required to do as mm-hmm. a matter of legal ethics. I am not or pushing for people to join the lawsuit. It would be unethical for me to go out
okay.
in search of clients like this. It would be an improper advertisement and what have you. So all I can comment on it, and that is not my request.
Okay.
And just to be clear, from an ethical perspective, you know, I became acquainted with you in this show as a result of some of my clients who I think have said to you that they would like this vehicle to be, to be a way of reaching people to be aware that the lawsuit is out there. So that request is not mine, and it's important that I state that.
Okay, well, that's good clarity because it's actually Karen who alerted me to it, and she'd like to see more awareness of this lawsuit and more parents. So that's a good clarification.
And
so thank you.
That's important to me to do, so I don't run afoul of any state bar regulations, which I'm very conscious of.
Right.
That being said, I can respond to your comments this way, which is that the lawsuit is as valid on behalf of one as it is on behalf of 1,000, and the only difference between it between having one and 1,000 is that obviously the more voices that are speaking, the louder the message. And so this lawsuit has received a lot of press coverage. There has been a lot of communication and contact from different sources of people who may or may not be interested in the lawsuit. I would say that if people are interested in finding out more about the lawsuit, they certainly can either contact you all, or they can contact my law firm, and we can answer questions that anybody might have if they're interested in knowing more about it. By no means is my participation in this program or my comments intended or designed to be a solicitation of any kind.
Okay, no, that's fair, certainly. I know that a lot of people out there may not know of this particular petition and the fact that there are many people joining that have minor daughters and that are school age in Texas. And I think it's important that many people do join and that they do, you know, is there a hearing date set?
No. The lawsuit was filed, and then, you know, as all lawsuits, there was a need to serve through formal service of process. The governor is then given a period of time in which to formulate a response. The governor has just recently formed and filed his response. Interestingly, and this is a matter of public record, the governor's response is that the citizens of Texas who are impacted by this executive order lack standing to complain about it, which I am interested in hearing more about, because I can't imagine that anybody impacted by his executive order does not have standing. It would be almost unfathomable to me that the people who are complaining, you know, can't complain. And so maybe the governor thinks he can do anything and nobody can complain about it. I don't know.
Well, there is the right to own your own body, and if someone is saying that you have to have an injection of a vaccine that's just recently been licensed, there have been no long-term safety or efficacy studies done on it, I think that's rather shocking. I would certainly think that would give you standing in and of itself.
Well, what really gives you standing is the fact that you're a citizen of Texas in the impacted group, and you're complaining about a violation of your constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
That's the important thing. The Constitution doesn't exist to protect the governor. It exists to protect all citizens of Texas. And when there's a violation, which can really typically only occur through action of the government or a branch of them, in this case the governor, the citizens have an absolute right to complain about it in court. And
what?
So it strikes me as somewhat odd that the Attorney General's office has filed a response to this lawsuit on behalf of the governor, saying that people who are complaining lack standing to do so. Likewise, I find it also interesting that the Attorney General's office is actually defending the governor in this case, insofar as they have reportedly issued an informal opinion of their own, saying that the governor lacks the authority to issue the executive order in the first place. So there are a lot of interesting questions that...
So there is contradictory. The Attorney General's statements are contradictory. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, well, there is a senator, state senator by the name of Jane Nelson, who has been very active in this arena. Incidentally, she's very pro-vaccine.
Uh-huh.
Also very anti-governor taking and usurping the power to mandate it in the fashion that he has. She's what I would call right in the middle of the road. She thinks the vaccine is probably a good thing. She's in favor of education. And then whatever process has been designed to be followed as opposed to just this mandatory dictatorial type of an approach. But she had requested she and another member of the legislature requested that the Attorney General give an informal opinion as to the validity of this executive order, and the response was he doesn't have the authority to do it. It probably doesn't rise to the level of being a law, which is also somewhat puzzling because by definition an executive order is law.
Right.
Until it's been undone. So it still has to be undone before it loses its effect as a law.
Right.
Excuse me. Just
wow, that's amazing.
So it's a very peculiar scenario.
Right.
The constitutional scholars who have spoken about it and who I've spoken with about it are all somewhat puzzled by just the whole development of it.
Right. It sounds like someone's not thinking clearly or their thinking skills have been compromised. But anyhow, let's go ahead and open up the caller line. There probably are a few people that want to ask you specific questions, maybe about the petition or, you know, just about how you can get involved and some of your opinions. So, anyhow, the number to call in is 800-313-9443. Again, that's 800-313-9443. Hi, Dave in Arkansas. Welcome to the program. Do you have a specific question for Kenneth?
Good morning, Angry and Kenneth. And Kenneth, your petition is right on point. I would like to point out that the Texas Constitution under the Bill of Rights, Section 29, is identical with that of Section 29 here in Arkansas, stating this enumeration of rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people and to guard against any encroachment of rights herein retained or any transgression of any of the higher powers herein delegated. We declare that everything in this article is accepted out of the general powers of the government shall forever remain inviolate, and all laws contrary thereto shall be void. That is a people's claim. But, you know, Kenneth, as a matter of law, the failure to deny is construed as an admission, correct?
In some instances, probably so.
Well, I would say in most. So what that's saying, though, is that the people's silence is their consent and agreement, okay?
Right. Well, in that sense, what you're saying is if people don't challenge abuses of power by the government, then it sets a predicate or a precedent that
right.
other similar types of abuses are tolerable or acceptable.
If Absolutely
I think where
correct.
You're going.
Well,
and I would agree that that's probably true.
It is the people's duty to challenge authority. But the problem with all this is the fact that the people generally do not have any tools to do this with. And I would invite folks to go to my website, nomoreserfs.com. That's spelled S-E-R-F-S.com. Click on documents, and the first one you're going to find is an actual notice of parental authority to refuse consent to include vaccination, sex education, family profiling, psychiatric screening, psychotropic drug dispensing, or obesity testing. This document is sent to the local school board, to the school principal where the child's in attendance, and also to the director of the State Department of Education, okay? And regarding vaccinations, it's stating this refusal of consent includes but is not limited to the injection of any foreign substance in the body of our child in the form of vaccinations, shots, oral vaccines, epidermal patches, or in any other manner that contain live or killed bacterium, virus, pathogen, germs, bacillus, microorganisms, mercury compounds, aluminum compounds, formaldehyde, derivatives from aborted human fetal tissue or of any animal origin may be introduced into or upon the body of our child. This refusal of consent is constructive notice to the corporate state of, in this case, Arkansas, and its subsidiary corporate entities and all employees of same that the father and mother have investigated the subject matter at issue and are immune from any charges of child neglect under color of law that might be brought this refusal of consent for vaccination. And
well, Dave, it is Dave.
Yes.
Okay. Dave, we actually have an exemption law in Texas. I know Don Richardson approved, has worked for 6 years to get a philosophical exemption. So they do have an exemption in Texas. And I know that you now have a religious and philosophical exemption in Arkansas. So I appreciate your comments. But right now, this lawsuit doesn't have anything to do with the veracity of the HPV vaccine, you know, how good it is. I'm not the veracity, but, whether it's effective or not, all the ingredients. I mean, we know it has 225 micrograms of aluminum, which is horrible, and there are people getting adverse reactions to it, rather severe, some of them. But actually, we are questioning on this program the authority of the governor to issue such an executive order mandating a vaccine when it's not a disaster. There's no epidemic of cervical cancer in Texas. There's no epidemic of cervical cancer that's caused by this virus in Texas. It only is reportedly to protect against 4 strains. There's over 100 HPV strains out there, and there is no epidemic of this disease among school-age girls in particular. And
if I can interject,
sure.
Also, I appreciate your comment in that regard. First of all, I am by no means qualified to speak as to propriety or impropriety of any vaccine, and neither is it my agenda to say this is a good or a bad vaccine. Our singular focus, I'm sure that there is a political bent to this program or what have you, which I'm not really altogether interested one way or the other in. I am just all about the question of whether or not the governor has the authority to require this. And if he doesn't, then shutting it down, just as I would if it was some other topic. I will make an observation, however, that I think is relevant, and that is that the executive order on its face says it is promoting a recommendation by the Centers for Disease Control, and which is tantamount to saying we are following the the recommendations of the CDC here. Well, if in fact Governor Perry is grounding his decision recommendations of the CDC, then I think he ought to take notice of the fact that recently the chairman of the CDC committee, which came out and made the recommendation in favor of inoculation with Gardasil, turned around and said he is adamantly opposed to mandatory inoculation programs.
Yes.
Okay, and that's a very powerful statement, which is to say that while the medical community in support of the vaccine may in fact support the vaccine as being a safe, effective vaccination, whether it is or it isn't, they likewise do not believe that it should be legislatively or gubernatorially mandated. And that's not a power statement. That's just a pragmatic approach to the situation. And it underscores the fact that there is no urgent, emergent type of situation that causes the need for any rush to judgment, let alone something as dramatic and drastic as the governor's executive order in this instance.
Right.
Particularly without fully informed consent, no one can be compelled.
Right. Well, of course, and then there are the exemptions, but the Department of or the Texas Board of Health, it says they may modify or delete any immunizations, you know, so they can add, they can delete, and they can require any immunizations against specific diseases for admission to elementary or secondary school. That's already part of law, that they've been given that authority by the legislature.
Well, what's interesting also is why the governor chose to impose, and this is another aspect of the lawsuit, which I neglected to mention earlier, the governor's executive order is not only an improper exercise of power in terms of mandating that people get the vaccine, but qualifying admission to school, on having the vaccine is actually punitive in nature, as is the exemption process. You are subject to penalty for failure to comply with this particular executive order. And the penalty, on the one hand, is imposed upon a young girl. She's denied access to school, and or her parents are forced to permit a significant invasion of privacy in having to publicly file a document that reveals some of their own philosophical beliefs, which could cause them to be categorized in certain ways, in governmental databases, or still, by filing the exemption, it could compromise their health insurance coverage. It could do many things that would be viewed by the impacted person as being punitive in nature. And the greatest irony of all, perhaps, is why the governor chosen to bring this battle to the school age front. There's no indication and anybody is communicating HPV in school. It's not like it's a communicable disease like, a polio or a chicken pox or something where children would have it communicated in the schoolroom. So it's
right.
Very strange.
Well, we're coming up on a break. You're with Kenneth Chaykin, and please stay tuned. Thank you for your call, Dave. You can call 800-313-9443 if you have a question of Kenneth.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumor of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes 4 books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years. No change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing. And no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Did you hear about Joe Bannister, IRS Special Agent Criminal Investigator that quit the IRS a few years ago because the IRS failed to show him the law or legal authority for ordinary Americans like you and me to file and pay income tax?
What do you mean? Everyone knows you have to file and pay income taxes.
Well, not only did the IRS fail to show Joe Bannister a law that requires you and me to file and pay income tax when Joe was working for the IRS, but even after Joe quit the IRS, the IRS failed to show up to several debates that the IRS was invited to debate Bannister about the legality of the income tax.
Wow, this is amazing information. Where can I find out more about this?
Go to the website at www.livefreenow.org. That's 760-868-4271. And the website is www.livefreenow.org.
Well, we only have a few minutes left of the American Activist, at least for the hour that I'm on. Anyway, Don Harkins will be the next hour talking with Wendy Petey. Well, I'm sorry, Wanda Petey. She's leading the Circle of the Wagons April 23rd to 25th in D.C., where they have over 3,000 truckers already committed to go to the Capitol. So anyway, you're listening to Kenneth Chaykin, and I didn't know if there were any callers that had any further questions, but I want to just summarize that we do have a lawsuit against Governor Rick Perry. It's a petition for temporary and permanent injunction regarding his executive order that he did February 2nd mandating HPV vaccine against cervical cancer for young schoolgirls. And so we have both House Bill 1098 that looks like it's going to pass to also oppose the executive order, and then we have this lawsuit. So I think it's important.
Ingrid,
go
by
ahead.
The way, House bill, which hopefully will be passed by the Senate, and will be presented as a potential piece of statutory legislation,
mm-hmm.
still has to go to the governor, and
yes.
he has not said. He will not veto it. In fact, there is a strong belief that in pressing his agenda, whatever it may be in this deal, he will veto it, which means that if he does, unless the legislature can go into override mode to override the veto, then our lawsuit is going to be the only mechanism for challenging his executive order. So that's something that people need to keep in mind. And I think that's one of the thing that's happened out there is I think people come to believe for whatever reason that because the legislature has taken on this this mission of trying to unwind this executive order and because there have been published reports that Merck has suspended its lobbying efforts, that
mm-hmm.
this problem is no longer one that they need to be concerned about or that it
right.
doesn't exist anymore. And I don't think that that's a correct point of view.
No, I totally agree. There's a lot of factors here. They'd have to have two-thirds of the legislature to stop his veto. And so you're counting on that, but in a lawsuit, too, the judge can have his opinion sway. I mean, a lot of people believe that judges in Texas are heavily influenced by corporate interests. So, you know, I mean, that's why it's so important that we address it from both sides.
Right.
I mean, there should be a check on the executive branch by both the judicial as well as the legislature.
Well, the good news is that, you know, the reputation of the Travis County bench is a very solid one, and we know, that just recently at least one member of that bench you know, declared another executive order by the governor to be unlawful. And so, and that was in a very politically charged corporate type of environment. And so, I think that we're in a good place where we have to be in any event. I think the judiciary is more than qualified in this arena and in this location to properly address this issue. And again, we've seen nothing in the way of authoritative legal points offered by the governor yet to explain this situation. And as the case develops, we're going to learn more about his theories on that. But until then, there doesn't seem to be any authority for him to do it.
Well, thank you so much, Kenneth, for being on the program. You can go to chickenlaw.com and... or you could email me, go to backlib.org, contact the Idaho Observer, and I'll put you in touch with Jakin and Shakin, who can join in this lawsuit. So thanks so much, Kenneth, again, for being on the air. And please stay tuned for Don Harkins and Wanda Petey for the next hour.